Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. First up is kplot, which I don't have anything to say about. It is a library. It's got the usual assortment of header files and some CMake preset files and a .so, a library. And it describes itself as kplot widget is a qwidget derived class that provides a virtual base class for easy data plotting. The idea behind kplot widget is that you only have to specify information in data units, that is, the natural units of the data being plotted. Kplot widget automatically converts everything to screen pixel units. Well, that's nice. Kplot widget draws X and Y axes with tick marks and tick labels and automatically determines how many tick marks to use and where they should be based on the data limits specified for the plot. I can see how that would be super useful. I can't imagine personally myself ever using that. I mean, I guess never is a long time, but not anytime soon. So that's all I know about that. I'm assuming that this is used maybe in kmplot, which I think we've talked about. MNOP, yeah, we must have talked about it. It's one of those plotting calculator type applications, but I could be wrong. Maybe that's an entirely different widget specific to kmplot. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking this, but kplot widget is what I just read, and that's all I know about it. Next up is kmymoney. This is kind of a big one. I know a lot of people do use software rigorously to manage their accounts, and that's great. I have to admit, I am not one of those people. I mean, I do use software to manage my accounts, but not a dedicated accounting software. I have no experience with that sort of thing, and I'm not confident in myself that I would be rigorous enough to manage the software managing my account. Now, kmymoney has some cool features that, in theory, should make it sort of possible to only be nominally involved with sort of like the incoming and outgoing amounts of your account. So you don't have to go in and manually enter things. That's kind of where I fall apart, is where I'm supposed to come home and remember to input something into a software so that expense has been accounted for. And that's just not the way I work. I've tried it. I have to do it when I'm business traveling. You know, I have to rigorously manage expenses and things like that. But realistically, it is not something that I do on a daily basis. So is kmymoney right for me? It might be. It might be that I'm missing out on a lot of features, but I do not use it. So when you start kmymoney, you are able to put in a bunch of personal information. Or you can just import it from your PIM, and you can skip that step, or you can do it. Then you select your currency, and I'm just going to put in New Zealand dollar, because that's what I use. And then, although that's, to be fair, that's not the only currency I have accounts for. So I do have U.S. dollar, you know, bank accounts with U.S. dollars in it. So I don't know how that figures into this equation. Next up, it says that I can set up a checking account from which I can pay bills and into which I can receive money. You can skip this step, and I kind of had to because I know the name of the name of the account is arbitrary. I know the account number that I would input. I know the opening balance. I know the name of the institution. Routing number. I don't know the routing number. I don't even know how to find the routing number. I looked for it on my bank's website, and all I could find was references to a SWIFT code. So I got no clue what a routing number, how to find a routing number. So I put in what I could and then skipped everything else. And then it got worse because then you have to select what kind of accounts you want to pre-populate your kmymoney with. And they are organized into countries, and New Zealand is not listed as a country with defaults. So I guess more or less the closest maybe would be the UK. Australia's not there either. So I guess the UK would sort of probably be, because New Zealand takes a lot of its traditions and sort of default settings from the UK. So I put in the common accounts of the UK, a basic set of accounts most commonly used. And it looks like there's a lot here. It does tell you what you're signing up for. There's current assets, cash and wallet. Who has cash and wallet anymore? Well, actually, I think I actually do, but I mean, not really. Checking account, savings account, equity. I don't even know what that means. Literally don't know what equity is. Expense, adjustment. I don't know. I mean, I know what an expense is. Why would I be adjusting it? Auto, bank service charge. I don't have that. Books, cable, charity, clothes, computer, you know, just on and on. And charity is a hard one too, because I actually do donate a lot of money to, well, not a lot of money, but like I donate frequently to free software projects. But I don't know, I don't get like charity receipts from those. So do I count those as charities? Does it matter? And so on. So there's a bunch of sort of pre-built things that I mean, ultimately, I think I recognize that I would probably just have to customize in the end. But then once you're done, and it asks you how you want to store all of your data. You can do it as a SQL or XML. I'm going to choose XML because, as I understand it, and from what K My Money seems to be suggesting, that's the one that's kind of a common format for a lot of different banking institutions. And I do happen to kind of vaguely know that there's there's a couple of interchange formats that I believe are XML based. So it seems reasonable to me. I mean, I'm sure it could be converted either way, but that's what I'm going to go with. Once you've set up K My Money, then you are taken to kind of your central overview, the big hub overview of your accounts. And as it says, like, you know, it's got certain pre-populated accounts. So there's things like credit card, and that's a liability account. Oh, that's nice. There's asset accounts, cash in wallet, checking account, the bank that I put in, savings account, and so on. And there are links. So if I go to a savings account, I didn't set up a savings account because I wasn't prompted to during the setup wizard, but that's okay. What you can do is go to the accounts tab over on the left and look into the place where the savings account was listed. That was an asset account, not a liability, of course. And then there's my normal bank, and then current assets. And within there, where did that go? There is a savings account entry. Now, if I right click on that, I can go to edit account. And now I can name the account. So I could put in something new, which would be good because, you know, there's lots of different kinds of savings account these days. You could have like a savings account that's just a normal savings account, or you could have it where it's like, you know, long term, like whatever they call them. I guess different countries probably call them different things. So in New Zealand, they're called, I think, a PIE account, P-I-E. And I don't remember what that means, but you allocate money and then you get a higher interest rate, but you can't get that money on, you know, without notice. Like you have to tell them, hey, next month I'm going, or in 3 months I'm going to withdraw this amount. It just depends on sort of what you're willing to give up. And then in the balance, it says it's a checking account. It's not checking, it's savings, clearly. And then in the balance, let's put $1,000 into, well, let's put $1,024 into this savings account. Last check number doesn't matter. It's not a checkings account. Institution, I don't care. And there's a bunch of stuff in there that I don't even know anyway. Limits, taxes, wow, lots of information. Okay, so there I've just put, I've created a new asset, or I've edited the asset account. And if I go back home, then indeed, in addition to what I have in my normal bank account, now I have $1,024 in my savings account. Now, if I go to my normal account, then it shows my opening balance, and I've got a couple of different things that I can do on a daily basis. I can deposit money, I can transfer money, or I can withdraw money from this. And so you could go in here and move money around between accounts. Now, I mean, that's the basics, and I'm not going to go into. I mean, there's more. There are reports that you can generate, which is very cool. You can see bar graphs. Maybe this is using kplot. Who knows? There's net worth, cash flow. I don't know what that means. Investments, taxes, but budgeting. I guess you could create a budget. Yeah. So that's kind of the what you do here, and this is all really cool. But it's a lot of interaction that I know myself. I'm not gonna do. I'm not gonna keep up with that. So I'm not gonna use this personally. What I will say about it is that it is really a nice. It's a nice setup, and I could see myself getting into this in a different situation. Like I don't know, if I felt like it was worth doing. As it is, I use a LibreOffice spreadsheet to sort of outline my budget for the year. I essentially just put upper limits of things that I shouldn't spend any more than this for the year on this category of items. And it's not a rule set, it is simply a goal. And at the end of each year, I look over it and see how I did. And if I did well in a category, then I make note of that. If I did poorly in a category, then I decide what I want to do. Do I want to raise my expected limit? Or do I want to next year consider that a little bit more next time before I buy that coffee or whatever, that muffin from the cafe, whatever. So yeah, it's something that I do sort of separately, and it's not a daily, it's a once a year thing. I put in the amount and then I kind of forget about it. I mean, I check in with it, but I kind of forget about it until the end of the year. And then I just look at the categories, and the categories I derive from the internet banking application that my bank provides. And that is what I really think that's the challenge to K My Money and to other budgeting software packages out there, at least for me, is that the I'm not going to save that. Is that the banks these days, at least here in New Zealand, I mean, they've got really excellent, maybe excellent is a strong word. They have very capable website systems set up where you can go in, transfer money, make payments, and so on. And in New Zealand, you can also it's really, really fluid the way that you can get money between people. Like if you buy something off of like the New Zealand equivalent of eBay, then you can just send the person your bank account, or rather, if you've sold something, you send the purchaser your bank account number, and they go into their bank and they send you money like right away. I think the equivalent in the US is Venmo, but I don't know what Venmo is. I think it's like a third party thing that you have to sign up for, I think. Or maybe it's integrated into banks now. I don't know. Point is, in New Zealand, it just is. It's just there. You just trade money around with account numbers. It happens all the time, I would say. In fact, that's the default method of paying between just normal people. Like if someone bought you paid for half of a meal, or yeah, no, if you want to pay for like half of a meal, then you don't give a person a $20 bill. You ask them for their banking details, and then you just send the money from your bank. It's quite digital these days. So in practice, I don't know that K My Money is really that useful to me, and I think that shows because I don't use it. I don't use it myself. I have tried. I've poked around with it, and it's just realistically not the way that I'm managing my money right now. Let's play a game called K Naval Battle. Actually, let's not. I hate this game. I really do, honestly. I mean, I don't hate the program, just to be clear. The application is really cool. It is really nice, actually. Not only can you play a single player game against the computer, you can host a network game, or you can connect to a network game in progress. So it's really neat. I mean, what more could you ask for? I just love that kind of thing where games, I mean, I don't actually play networked games, but I just love the idea that those are the options. You can play single player, you can play networked. I wish there was an option to play like two player at the same computer, but I do recognize as well that that would be really weird because like every turn you'd have to like turn your chair or like promise to close your eyes and promise not to peek. So yeah, I get that that doesn't, but the network game is a great co-op option to have. It's just, I don't like Battleship. I don't like that game. I think it's a stupid game. There's really no, I don't know of a strategy to it. And if there is a strategy, then I don't find it interesting. So I don't know. It's cool that it exists. It's cool that it's networked, but it is exactly the game that you remember as a kid. You would sit there and call out places to bomb on a board. And if there was a ship there that you hit, then you would know that. And you could mark it on your little board and try to figure out where the next ship is and so on. It's just a boring game, I think. It's just, you just click and click and click and click. Really, really silly. It is definitely a functional game, though. It's nicely executed. And if people do like Battleship, then I imagine that that's going to be a pretty cool game for them to have access to. You know what is a fun game to me? K-Netwalk. If you have not played this, you have to try it. Honest. It is so cool. So, the setup, I mean, first of all, the setup. I mean, the setup is obviously of interest if you are, it's probably of interest if you are using Linux. Not necessarily. There are people who are using Linux who are not interested in network configuration or network topography at all. But if you are, if you do lean towards being fascinated by that sort of thing, then K-Netwalk sort of automatically appeals. Like there's something to it now. The theme of it is pretty spot on. So the theme of K-Netwalk is that you have some number of terminals that you want to connect to the internet. Now, admittedly, there's no question, presumably when this internet thing, the internet, the World Wide Web, presumably, I think what you're connecting to is probably the gateway server. Like that's actually what you're connecting to. So there's no, you know, you're not really dealing with hubs and things like that or routers or switches. But what you are doing is you're trying to essentially run cable from every terminal on the board in such a way that they all can be connected to this the internet through a single point of through a single contact. So you only have one cable exiting the internet icon. And when you click on an icon, the cable, there we go, the cable shifts. Oh, actually, on this one, there's two points of connection on the internet. Okay. So the point being, I guess, is that the cables cannot be moved, but they can be rotated. So you're trying to create a pipeline that is able to connect all terminals to your setup. And it's very satisfying because when that connection is, when the magical blue smoke can get through the pipeline to the internet, then the internet pops up onto the monitor, onto the terminal screen. So it's very, very satisfying. You know, you get that instant feedback of like, ah, good, a connection has been made. That's perfect. And if you've ever been trying to configure a network and you're running over to terminals or you're SSHing into a terminal to ping 8888 or whatever you ping to confirm that, yes, I can see the outside world. Maybe you ping just google.com because you want to also test name resolution, which is fair enough. But that is super satisfying to see that little light beam on. But it is a real puzzle because there are terminals, you know, that connect to two different pipelines, let's call it. And you think, well, how can that be useful? Like that must be a pipeline to get that terminal. But then how does this terminal here connect up to the pipeline? If you move a pipe to satisfy, you know, one thing, it steals the internet from another. So it's just a really fun visual puzzle for pretend networking fun. And that it's a weird thing to do because it is a little bit silly. I mean, this isn't really how networks should work. I mean, like maybe there's a, I, I, I bet you could you could get an internet get a network to work this way. You would not like that. It would not be useful. Although you know what? I guess if you saw every three-way intersection as essentially, you could just pretend like that's a router or a switch, whichever you prefer. It doesn't really matter in this context. Then you could kind of, yeah, then that kind of makes some sense. Yeah, that makes sense actually. Okay. But anyway, it's a little bit silly because it isn't, you know, in real life, you would just make it connect differently. But for whatever reason, in this scenario, all you can do is rotate switches and hubs and cables. You can't actually just run a new cable from here to there or whatever. Which I guess, you know, there's some realism there as well. I mean, these aren't necessarily in the same building. These could be different. These could be terminals representing global connections, and you're trying to tether them together. Anyway, whatever you have to tell yourself to make this game work, it is a fun puzzle, to the point that there have been several times where I just think, well, this one's not solvable. Like this time their random algorithm has created a completely unsolvable puzzle, and then you spend another 5 minutes on it and you think, oh, I see now. That group of terminals shouldn't be a group of terminals. That needs to connect to this group over here, and then this one goes way over there and connects back over on the other side of the board. And then, you know, yeah. So it's a lot of fun, is what I'm trying to say. There's no time limit. This isn't what's that one game where it's like, or that mini game in BioShock where you're like hacking and there's like that green gloop that sort of goes through the pipeline, and so you have to do it quickly before the green gloop gets out. This isn't that. This is just puzzle pieces that you rotate until the internet is able to navigate through the pipeline and find every terminal. Until every terminal has the internet on its screen, the game is in play. There's no time limit. I mean, the quicker you do it, the better your high score is, but that's what you're up against. It's a lot of fun. And actually, I think no, that one, that's got to be the right config. Yeah, this one's killing me. But yeah, this is a lot of fun. Test it out if you have not tried it. It is so much fun. I'm gonna go get a cup of coffee while I try to solve this final puzzle that I accidentally started during the show. And you go get some coffee, try KNetWalk. We'll come back, we'll finish up the show. And we're back. I've got my coffee, and I did solve the puzzle. It took me 6 minutes, but I did get it. I had like 44 moves, which is really bad. And it's such a fun game. K Network. Wow, what a discovery. I never knew that existed until going through the applications for this episode. So, it's a lot of fun. Really, really bad to open that up if you are trying to get actual work done. So avoid it at all costs. But if you're looking for a good game, definitely give it a try. K Network. All right. Next in the list is K New Stuff. And K New Stuff is a library implementing collaborative data sharing for applications. It uses LibAttica to support the Open Collaboration Services specification. You can see K New Stuff in action if you go to your system settings and go to something like go to appearance, for instance, and then go to more appearance settings, and then there's a button in the lower right corner of this, get new global themes. Click on that and you're watching K New Stuff in action. And this is a really, really slick little feature of KDE that I have always appreciated. And honestly, I've almost always used it. I think this is probably the first iteration of Slackware that I've not used this feature yet. Yeah, I'm not really sure. But it's, I mean, especially this one, the, like the one that, the example that I'm using right now, the global themes. I mean, this is, if you don't love the themes that are available for KDE, you want something different, go to settings, find a different theme that you prefer. They'll theme different things. They'll give you different opening, or not open, but minimize and close buttons on your window decorations, which by the way, I should actually do. Here's the thing about the window buttons on my desktop is I've got four of them. I've got the always keep above all other windows. I've got the pin a window to every desktop, to every virtual desktop. I've got the minimize button, which is an arrow pointing down. And then I've got the maximize button, which is an arrow pointing up. So the problem there is that on my desktop, I have my panel at the top of my screen. So when I minimize, I'm clicking an arrow pointing to the bottom of my screen, which for people using the default setup makes sense. But for me, with my panel at the top, makes no sense. I'm minimizing something down? No, I'm actually minimizing it up. So for me, the up arrow would make more sense as the minimize button, and the, I guess, I don't know, what no arrow for maximize. I don't understand why a maximize button points up, to be honest, except that I guess the assumption is that your window is not along the top of your screen because it's not maximized. But I mean, that's not always true. So that's kind of strange, and it's problematic. It's vaguely problematic for me. It's not terribly problematic, but it's a little bit weird. Whereas something that was just, I don't know, something else could make more sense for me. I mean, certainly maximize, I think a square makes sense. So I could scroll through here. I could look at the K new stuff and find maybe some window decoration that I prefer. And that's it. That's K new stuff. I'm not gonna do that right now. Window decorations. There's get new window decorations as well. So if I wanted to find just specifically just some new window decorations, I don't care about the icon set and all that other stuff. I just want some new window decorations. Then I could do that. And so on. So those are the options. I clearly have been happy enough with the KDE, what is this, KDE 5 25th anniversary, whatever edition. I'm clearly happy enough with its overall theme that I have not actually bothered resorting to KNew stuff. But I do love that KNew stuff exists. I think it's a really slick feature. It's one of those other things about a Linux desktop where, because it's open source, because there's collaboration and contribution, you get this store shopfront like experience where everything costs $0. It's just so nice, and it is it's something that I think it's easy to take for granted, and it's really easy to take for granted because, you know, we don't necessarily always use it. I mean, there's a KNew stuff for wallpapers as well, so that's a really easy way of getting some new wallpaper. So I don't know, take a look at it, appreciate it, even if you don't use it. At least take a moment to appreciate that it exists, because, I mean, honestly, that's integration to a larger collaborative network that most desktops, they just don't have that. And if they do, it's to vendors. It's to places trying to make money off of something. And I won't say that KNew stuff is a paradise of nothing but high quality contributor content. I mean, there are definitely things in there that like, especially the wallpaper stuff, you know, that have just been contributed by some entity. You know, I don't know if it's a person, I don't know if it's a network, I don't know what it is, but there's junk on there for sure, but there's a lot of cool stuff too. All right, next application on the list, what's this? K Knights. Oh yeah, this is a chess game. If you like chess, and who doesn't, then you can play chess against either another person, a computer engine of your choice, GNU Chess, Crafty, Stockfish, or Sejang, or a chess server like freechess.org, or probably, no, just freechess.org, okay. So yeah, that's what you can do. You can play chess on your computer, and it's a fairly, I don't know, fairly predictable setup. It's kind of interesting because it switches, like if it's if it's human against human, it switches the orientation of the board on every turn, which is really quite nice because that way you see it from your own perspective every time. You don't have to be the one person who's like struggling to envision what the board would look like, you know, turning your head over around to see what that would look like. So yeah, it's a pretty cool little setup. And darn it, now I've started a chess game, but we can just, it's fine. Well, let me just capture that pawn really quick. And actually, let me just mobilize that knight. Oh, I'm going to capture the knight. Okay, anyway, I was just playing chess, literally. I was playing both sides. Okay, so yeah, it's a good game. And yes, the fact that it integrates into chess servers is really, really nice. I've not played multiple games with K-Knights. That's the one thing. Isn't that funny that I'm saying K-Knights? It's actually knights, technically, right? Because that's K-Knight, knight. Anyway, I haven't played multiple games, so that would be interesting to see how well that sort of holds up, I guess. But other than that, yeah, it's a nice little board. K-Notes is up next. K-Notes is well, it's actually really great, to be honest. It is, you know, it's as with many of these little applications, because of K-Parts and KCM and so on, you can launch it as its own sort of little application, and then you have virtual sticky notes on your desktop, all over the place. And I mean, it can get out of hand, absolutely. But I mean, some people, I have seen people who really like this method of kind of just, you know, creating to-do lists, and they're maybe different colors of notes or different information in different ones that with different fonts or whatever. And they look just like sticky notes in real life. You know, they've got the right, they look like the bright yellow color, you know, just like you'd imagine. They appear in your system tray with a persistent, making each note persistently available. So even if it's not visible, it still exists. So if you want to refer to a note, you can just click on the little sticky note icon in your system tray to bring up a specific note. Now, the other way that you can access this, because again, because it's technically a KCM, I guess, is through Kontakt, the big personal information management application, which can house an instance of Kmail and of Aggregator and Kjournal or Kjots rather, and so on. So the notes application is not that one. I just clicked on Kaggregator. Not this one. Where is K? Oh, pop-up notes. There it is. Ah, oh, interesting. It's called pop-up notes. Okay. Because there's another one just called notes, and that's not it. So K pop-up notes is the one with the yellow sticky notes. I think. Yes, it is. Okay. And there they are. They're my notes in a notebook, which I've talked about this before from a different angle, from the K notes angle. But the pop-up notes is a different view of the same data, and it's kind of interesting, and quite powerful too, I guess, because that, I mean, that way you can have everything. You can have your notes in a structured view as if though it was in a dynamic and hyperlinked notebook, or you can have them extracted as little sticky notes on your desktop. I think that could be really useful for certain people. Like if that's the way that you sort of like to track your tasks, I could see how that would be really, really, really useful. And maybe it would be useful in different, you know, as different from different angles at different times. So maybe you want today, you want your sticky notes available to you because you're at work and you need to know what to work on next. But over the weekend, you don't want them there, but you do still want them. You want access to them in your big notebook planner where you're kind of organizing the week ahead of you, something like that. I don't know. I'm just making things up, but that could be very, very useful, I think, for some people. So that's K sticky notes, essentially. I mean, it's called K notes, but yeah, it's the sticky note implementation of K note of the note application in PIM, the note functionality in PIM. Okay, let's talk about K notifications. K notifications is used to notify the user of an event. It covers feedback and persistent events. I'll take a look at this really quick in var blog packages. K notifications. There we go. Yeah, it is exactly what I figured it would be. The header files, it's a library. This I mean, this is a subsystem, essentially, that the KDE desktop runs that application authors, developers could hook into. If you need to alert the user of something, then you can send them a K notification. And that way, there's a log of the notification for the user. There's a little pop-up indicator up in the upper right corner of the screen for the user, and so on. I personally love how notifications have developed on computers. There is an episode out there. I wish I could find it. I didn't look for it, but there's an episode of this show out there in the archive where it is all about notifications. And I talk about how bad notifications are. And this was probably, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago, 6 years ago, 3 years ago. I don't know. Not three, probably more like, yeah, 5 or 7 or 10. And I talk about that. I talk about how bad notifications are, how they appear everywhere, how they appear nowhere, how they appear under a window, how they appear on top of a window at the wrong time, how they appear up in the upper right corner, in the left corner, down at the bottom. They're everywhere. And I say in that episode that we should be able to do better. This is a thing that we should be able to fix, and let's work on that as a community. And today, we fixed it. We did it. Like, it works. Like, job done. Like, we have notifications in a centralized location. They pop up reliably exactly in the same place. They are then stored as a log until you clear them. It is just, it's a beautiful, beautiful system. And I could not be happier with notifications. But wait, there's more. When I download something from Firefox, because I've got a Firefox and KDE integration plugin installed, when I download something from Firefox, a K notification pops up, and based on the MIME type, you'll remember about MIME types from the previous episode when I talked about KMIME, based on the MIME type, in the notification, there's a button offering for me to open that file in the most logical application for it. So if I've downloaded an ASCII doc application, it offers to open it for me in Emacs. If I've downloaded a LibreOffice file, it offers to open it in LibreOffice. If I've downloaded a torrent, it offers me to open up in KGET, which is never what I want, and I need to set that, actually. I prefer KTorrent, actually. So anyway, the idea is, though, that it is as intelligent as I think I want it to be, and it is very, very useful, very helpful, and I just love it. I can't tell you how much I love where notifications how they've developed. They're just brilliant. Speaking of notifications, there's a knotify config, which provides a configuration dialog for desktop notifications that can be embedded in your application. So this isn't an application on your desktop right now. Exactly. It is something that you can, options that you can provide people if you're a developer so that they can decide how things are notified. Now, there is a notifications setting in system settings. I don't know for sure I guess I could look really quick. Let's see if this is knotify config. Yeah. Is there a KCM for this that I can find? I don't see one. It might still use it, but I don't think it's a standalone thing. I think people, you know, if it's in system settings, then I think that the system settings people had to use this library to get it in there. Yeah, and there's like do not disturb modes. There's a toggle for that. There's critical notifications. How they pop up. Normal notifications. Do they show up over a full screen application or not? Low priority. Do they show a pop up? Yes or no. Do they show in history? Yes or no. And so on. So lots of granularity here. I love that. That's why I like KDE. It's why I love KDE. That kind of granularity is just so nice because it is, that's what I want. I don't want to set that every day, but because it's granular, I can set it once and then forget about it. I mean, I totally forgot, for instance, that my notification settings prohibited notifications over a full screen application. I've just taken that for granted for years. Of course they don't show up in a full screen application. Why would I ever want them to? Well, what if I did want them to? now I know where I can go to turn that off temporarily, or to turn it back on, or whatever. So it's just, I love that. I love that about KDE. I love it about Knotify. I love KDE notification system. It is brilliant. It works every single time for me. I just cannot be happier about how KDE handles its notifications. I don't know why everyone isn't using KDE. It's just so nice. Anyway, next up is Golf. That's Golf, the game, Golf. And it is the KDE version of it, and it is so much fun. It really is. It's legitimately fun. It is arguably relatively, you know, rudimentary. It's not the fanciest of interfaces. Like, it's line art, but it's you know, miniature golf. So it isn't like you're not an 18-hole course or anything. You're shooting around obstacles the best that you can, and you're trying to get into your golf ball into the hole, whatever they're called. Is it just called the hole? And there's elevation, and there are barriers, and there are blockades, and you can hit something with too much power and overshoot the hole, and so on. So it's a lot of fun, and there are all kinds of little barriers. Like, there are speed ramps and buzzers and things that bounce your ball when you hit them. So it's almost pinball, really. But in a golf setting, for whatever reason. Now, what's really neat about golf is that you can design your own course. Yes, you can go into edit mode and create your own little obstacles. And there's all kinds, like I say, there's all kinds of stuff. There's slope, puddle, wall, cup, sand, windmill, black hole, floater, bridge, sign, bumper, suggested par, all these kinds of things. And you can just design your own little course, and it's so much fun. And you can save it and replay it. You could distribute it. You could redistribute it to others, all that other good stuff. So Golf is a lot of fun. I would definitely show this to a kid, because I feel like when I was a kid, I had a little miniature golf game that I quite enjoyed for a while. And I remember just wanting to make my own courses so much, and they didn't have that functionality at that time. And this one does. So, I mean, now I don't care. I don't want to do that anymore. But I mean, I could see myself doing that on a lazy afternoon the next time I have another lazy afternoon. I think I have a lazy afternoon scheduled for 2035, actually. So maybe then I'll give it a go. But otherwise, yeah, show it to someone who has a lot of time and loves building their own little computer games. That's a great entry point for that, I think. I mean, you're not changing mechanics, you know, you're not coming up with programming logic necessarily, although some of those obstacles probably you could sort of consider those as logical puzzles. But I mean, it's still a lot of fun. Oh my gosh, another game, okay. Yet another game, Collision, spelled with a K, of course. And this one is a game of dodgeball. It's silly. It's a silly game. Your mouse is tethered to a blue ball. And when you click to start, a bunch of red balls just go at it. They're just all over the board. And you try to avoid being hit by these red balls. Of course, you don't exactly know. I mean, I'm horrible at this, by the way. In real life, I'm horrible at this. In real life, I am like, if there is a sport going on within, I don't know, a good 120 feet of me, I will get some kind of sport implement in the face 100% every time. So this is actually not a pleasant game for me at all. And it is a hard game because the red balls are just going all over the place, and they look just like those horrible red balls that your elementary school used to use for dodgeball. They're the same ones, and you are just frantically trying to avoid them. It's a nightmarish game. Horrible. Do avoid. Okay, next up is Color Paint. This will be the last one of the show, but of this episode, rather. I'm not ending the show, like, forever. I'm just ending the episode. So this one is Color Paint. This will be the last one, and I'm going to take a slightly different view of this than maybe arguably might be intended, or maybe not. I mean, I didn't write this program. I don't know what has been intended. I guess maybe multiple things have been intended. So here's the thing, right? Color paint is, if you open it and just start sort of messing around with it, you are going to think, okay, fun little MS Paint clone. I mean, that's very much kind of what it exudes. It has some basic painting implements. It's got a paintbrush, and you can draw with it, and it's chunky and very sort of, I mean, it says it's drawing Aliest, but I cannot detect that at all. I do not see any aliasing happening here, or I guess anti-aliasing. Maybe that's the problem. Okay. No, draw anti-aliased. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not exactly buying it, but that's what it says. And you know, you've got squares that you can draw, and that works, and circles, and rounded squares or rounded rectangles, and so on. So, and you can hold shift key to constrain things. So it all makes sense. It all kind of acts the way that you would think it would act if you'd never used Krita or MyPaint. And if you take it for me, if you look at it that way, then it is a very sort of rudimentary, and I don't know why you would ever use this, is what I'm trying to say. Like, this is not a useful application if you've ever seen something like MyPaint and Krita, which just make hand drawing on a computer so much better, just so much more useful. Because, I mean, at least it gives you, like, pressure weight and stroke speed, so that when you draw a line, the computer isn't detecting actually every subtle movement of your mouse. It understands that you want to go from here to there, and it smooths that stroke out, so it looks more like an ink stroke of what you would do with just your hand on paper. So there are so many nice little features in those applications, and I honestly just can't fathom why anyone would use this application for drawing anything. And then you might think, well, that's not fair, because, you know, you might use it to do pixel art. And that may be true. You might do that. In which case, I imagine that you'd really only be using one tool, and that should be a pencil. And there is no pencil tool here. So I guess you would have to use the paintbrush with a 1x1 setting. Yeah, I guess that would work. Oh, there is a pencil right there. I just didn't see it. A pen. Okay. But anyway, yeah. So I guess you could do that, and you would have to create a new document, create a new canvas that when you get it to like 100%, you're just seeing 16x16 pixels, or 24x24, or 256x256, whatever you want. So yeah, maybe that's one use, and that's a valid use, and pixel art is popular and useful for lots of different things. So that could be a thing. But for me, what I'm choosing to see this application as a very simple image adjustment application, and it doesn't advertise itself as that at all. Like, I mean, at least not that I can see. Really, it is apparently an easy to use paint program for KDE. Now, it does say, to be fair, that it can do image manipulation. So it doesn't hide that exactly. It's just the way that it sort of advertises itself on colorpaint.org is largely that it's a fun little paint program. I just happen to think that, at least personally, I think it's more useful as a really lightweight, or maybe not lightweight, but I mean, it's there, right? It's a KDE application, so you have it anyway. It's just there. And if you go to image, well, if you open a photograph and then go to the image menu, go to more effects, you have all kinds of different effects that you can apply to this image, many of which are very useful, like hue, saturation, and value. So you can kind of adjust sort of the look of the photograph. You can choose, invert isn't very useful, I don't think. Emboss, don't really need that. You got reduce colors, so you can optimize the image. You could invert it, or invert just certain channels. So yeah, you can modify things in the image thing. you've got rotate left, rotate right, rotate. So all those kind of basic things. Now, admittedly, a lot of these are also available in like GUI view. So maybe you don't even need to resort to color paint for that. But and I would love if color paint had like maybe some tools for marking up an image, like some arrows, some just auto shape arrows, if in case you want to take a screenshot and then highlight a certain area of that screenshot. I would love to just have a quick and easy arrow function rather than sort of what everyone's going to do, which is draw an arrow with the paintbrush and it's going to look horrible and silly. So I don't know. I guess the use case of this for me is a little bit puzzling. I'm not 100% sure, how I'm going to use it personally, if ever. I think pixel art is one thing that I can vaguely understand, that I can see. And I think just general adjustment of an image is something that I can definitely appreciate. But the drawing side of it, I think I would just use MyPaint or Krita or even GIMP with the MyPaint libraries is not actually so bad. So I don't think I would use ColorPaint myself. Is it great for a kid? Probably really, really great for kids. And I don't, that may be their market. That might be what they actually have in mind. But I mean, I'm just trying to sort of, I don't mean to sound negative about this application because this is great. Like for someone, this is exactly what they're looking for. I'm just saying for me, like as I struggle to understand like what I could possibly do with this application, I think for me it would be the image adjustment side of things. So that's color paint, not saving my work. That's color paint. And yeah, show it to a kid. See what kind of artwork they can create, I guess, because it is admittedly a lot less complex than MyPaint and Krita, certainly. So there you go. That's everything. Next time we'll pick right up with Compare, which I've done a whole episode on before, so I probably won't talk too much about it. Conqueror, Conquest, Console, and on and on. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.